basically the story of Yosef in Mitzrayim. In other words, we all know that the events that occurred to Yosef in Mitzrayim, beginning with the Mechira itself, was a result of the Hashkacha. It's not something that just happened by chance, but specifically it was a result of the Hashkacha. As we saw, we read, we went last week, it says that when Yosef was lost, he was looking for his brothers. It says, Vayim se'eo'ish. And Chazal say, Rashi says, that that was a malach. That was a messenger of God. Which means to say that had that not occurred, then Yosef was lost. He never would have found his brothers. And the whole Mechira wouldn't have taken place. But it was the will of God that the Mechira should take place. All right? So in general, we're all familiar with that idea. That all the events that occurred with Yosef and the brothers, his Mechira to Mitzrayim, and so forth, was a result of the Hashkacha. And we discussed this many times, that there were three main, so to speak, characters in the story. Each one of them was had a specific defect that had to be corrected. And that was to say, Yaakov Avinu. Even Yaakov had a what we would call a chait, I suppose. Of course, we have to recognize. I mean, we're talking about Yaakov Avinu. But even so, we said that his mistake, he had committed an error in that his view was distorted with regard to Yosef, and he made a mistake, and he showed him favoritism, and he brought about sinna. So that was an emotion within himself which he had to overcome. And then there was the envy of the brothers, which was their chait. And then there was the defect of Yosef, the Hunar. The Pasuk points it out, that he was involved in overestimation of the self, involved in vanity, and therefore his perfection demanded that he be sold, as a slave to Mitzrayim. In fact, you see that it says they saw Yishmaelim and they sold him to the Midianim. It's not clear who came by. Was it Yishmaelim? Was it Midianim? So there's different pshatim, but Chazal say that he was sold many times. That he wasn't just sold once, but that he was sold to one group, and one group sold him to another group, and he was sold many times. Of course, the question is, what's the significance of that? I mean, why is it important for us to know that? It would seem that the only thing that's important for us to know is that he was sold, and he winds up in Mitzrayim. Pick up the thread. Why do we have to know that he was sold many times? So, anybody? In the whole purpose, what was the purpose of the Mechira? Because what was his chait was that he had this emotion of overestimation of his importance, and therefore he couldn't identify with others who were on a lower level than him. So of course, to be sold as a slave is a breakdown, a tremendous breakdown of the ego. You see, now he's just an ordinary slave. It breaks down his whole sense of a superiority. But I say it's qualitatively different. It's one thing for a person to experience a setback. He was on top, and now he's a slave. All right, it's a terrible blow, but these things can happen. But it's quite different when you increase it. He sold from him. He sold it. In other words, he's treated like a piece of chattel. That's a different thing altogether. You see what I mean? It's one thing to, all right, one time I slipped, I was sold. But here you see that he's being treated like a piece of chattel, like he's being traded from one caravan. That totally removes his whole sense of dignity. Any sense of pride. He's just like an object being tossed around. That's a further breakdown. It's a further breakdown. Now my question is basically like this. If you read the story in Lamed Tes, you see that when he came down to Mitzrayim, so he was purchased by Potiphar, who was an officer of Paro. Alright, the Sar HaTabachim. Different interpretations what it is. Right? One of his important officers. And then it tells you about what happened over there. How he progressed and he developed, and he finally took complete charge of the house of Potiphar. And then all of a sudden another event occurs. All of a sudden the wife of Potiphar suddenly takes a liking to him, is attracted, has a strong attraction for Yosef. You're all familiar with the story. And she attempts to seduce him and he refuses. And then that incident where they're alone one day and he runs out of the house and she has the cloak, and there's a whole frame up. And then what happens is that he's thrown into jail, which of course is itself strange, because one would imagine that for a crime like that he should have been killed. And that's itself strange that he's not killed, but he's put into jail. And then again a similar process occurs in jail, because he finds favor right away in the eyes of the the one who was the warden, right? The Psar Beis HaSohar. And he again gives him tremendous responsibilities, and then one day he meets the Sar Mashkim, the Sar Ofim, and he interprets their dreams, and the dreams come true as he interprets, and he asks the Sar HaMashkim to remember him to Pharaoh, and the Sar HaMashkim doesn't remember him to Pharaoh, and he has to wait 2 more years, and then finally he's released. What is the whole, in other words, everything that occurs over here is the plan, it's part of the plan of the Ashgacha. So why did it have to be Bedafka this way? That's my question. In other words, for example, was the plan of the Ashgacha that he should be sold as a slave? And he was sold as a slave, and that's it. That was sufficient. And the subsequent experience, it seems like it goes in two phases. He's sold as a slave, so he's broken down. Then he begins to work his way up in the house of Potiphar. Everything seems fine. And then he suffers another blow. He's thrown into jail again. Now, why did he have to... Was that second time that he was thrown into jail? Is that also part of the plan? Was this the plan, in other words? The plan was that he should go to Mitzrayim, work his way up, and then get knocked down again? Or no? That was a separate... It just happened that way. It just so happened that the plan was that he should be sold as a slave, and that was it. It just so happened that he got into a situation, and that could happen. That doesn't have to be necessarily part of the Ashgacha. We're not saying that everything, every event in Yosef's life was dictated by the Ashgacha. We're not saying that, unless we have proof. And that just happened. He got into an incident with the wife of Potiphar, and he was thrown into jail. I'm saying, is that second case of being thrown into jail, is that also part of the Ashgacha? If it's part of the Ashgacha, then why did the Ashgacha work it out this way? There should be like two phases. That's what I'd like to go through today. I don't know if I'll go through the entire thing. All right? Anybody want to say anything before we begin? Yes? Whatever. So then we'll have to see, in other words. Was that...
It's also a funny thing.
Yeah. Very, very good. In other words, when we speak about the defect of egotism, we have to distinguish. There's a person whose essence is ego. That's a very good way of putting it. In other words, to talk about today, for example, just about anybody in society that's striving for a position, that's running for office, when we say he's got a big ego, we mean that's his whole essence. He's being motivated, driven by ego, not by any chachma that he uses just to satisfy his ego. Now, when we speak about Yosef HaTzadik and we say that his problem was ego, you can't say that it's the same thing. We're not saying that he had ego in the sense that he was motivated by ego. We mean to say that he was motivated by chachma. You see, but for him, in other words, he has emotions, and the emotion of ego was something which would have prevented him from attaining the highest levels of chachma. You see, so it was an accidental phenomenon. It was an accidental phenomenon. You see, and nevertheless, even though it's an accidental phenomenon, it's essential to remove in order for his ultimate perfection. That's the difference. Whereas when we speak about an egotist, we mean someone whose essence is ego. That's a very good clarification. Let's see what happened over here. So it says that Lamates. So the Pasuk Aleph says that he was bought by Potiphar, right? Then it says in Beis, Vahi Yad Hashem es Yosef, and God was with Yosef. Vahi Ish Matzliach, and he was successful. So you see, God was with the Hashgacha was with him, right? And he was successful. And he was in the house of his master, the Mitzri. What is this Pasuk telling you? What do we see from this? We see that even as a result of the breakdown, it didn't destroy him. You see, it did not destroy him. That I think is very good in line with what Mark said, because, in other words, the fact that God is with him, we know the sheet of the Rambam in Ashkacha. The Ashkacha of God is not with anybody at any time. The Ashkacha relates to a person insofar as that person, right, is on a high level in terms of his knowledge of God. The closer he is to God in terms of true knowledge of God, right? So the more he's under the influence of the Ashgacha. So for Yosef, it's telling you that Yosef was still under the influence of the Ashgacha, which means that Yosef was still on a very high level in terms of his Chachma. Now that's very good, in line with what Mark said. Because if we're talking about someone whose essence was an egotist, so the guy would have been broken. It's hard to imagine that he would have immediately, so quickly, been on the level of the Ashgacha. But for Yosef, you see, the breaking of the ego did not destroy him. It wasn't something which destroyed him. His essence was Chachma. He suffered, in other words. It's something which he suffered from. You see, he had a tendency towards that emotion interfering, but it wasn't his essence. That's why, you see, even as a result of the Mechir, he was still Yosef, and God was still with him. He still warranted the Hashgacha. Now, what does it mean? And he was in the house. He was in the house of the master. Why does that have to tell us that? We know already that he purchased him. All right, so the Mefarshim point out that there was a whole progression over here. When he first purchased him, he was an ordinary worker, a slave. He wasn't in the house yet. He was out in the, perhaps in the fields or in a different type of work. To be brought into the house was a promotion already. That's a higher level. He's doing more important work. You see? So God was with him and he was Matzliach. And as a result of his success, so then the master brought him into his house. That's one step. You see, you'll see if you go through every pasuk, you'll see that there's a progression. Then it says, Vayara Donav, that his master saw, Kero Shemito, that God was with him. V'chol Asherosa, Hashem Matzliach Biyado. And everything that he did, God would bring to success in his hands. Now what does that mean? How did his master see that God was with him? That's an interesting one. I mean, the master can see that he was that he was successful. That he could see. But how can you see that God is with someone? How can you see that? That's not so easy. What do you think, anybody? Offhand, without Rashi, you could say it in two ways. You could say that the master was like an ordinary person who had a belief in God. Like a, not a philosophical knowledge of God, like the average person is religious, believes in God. So when a person experiences unusual kind of success, so they believe that he's favored by God. God is with him. That's what, you know, people will say that about, you know, God was good to him. God was with him. It could be in that sense. But I think that Rashi is not saying it. Rashi says like this. Rashi says, Shem Shemayim Shogar B'Fiv. Shem Shemayim Shogar B'Fiv. In other words, that the name of heaven was constantly in the mouth of Yosef. Right? So I think that is more in line with what Solomon is saying. In other words, that it was more than just, you know, seeing extraneous success and saying, well, God is with him. But rather, it would appear from this that Yosef was constantly involved in the world of knowledge, and he spoke, he taught him, he could have had some communication. In other words, he expressed his philosophy about the God of the universe and the way a person gets closer to God and how God operates. So, therefore, when he heard these ideas, and then he saw the success that Yosef experienced, he recognized that Yosef is a man of God. It could be. You see what I'm saying? Because Rashi attributes it to Shem Shemayim. But what, so what? If Shem Shemayim Shagar B'Fiv. So what does that do with the master? It would seem from this that he had some type of an influence on the master in terms of teaching about God. Okay. So that's a higher level, you see. Pasuk Gimel means that the master took note of him. That he's a man who is under, is a special person, who has the hashkach of God. And then it says in Dalet, Vayimtzu Yosef chein b'yeinav, Vayasharis oso, that Yosef found favor in his eyes, and he ministered to him. Vayafkidei albeso, and he appointed him over his household. V'chol yeshlo nasam b'yado. What's this? So Pasuk Dalet, you see, if you read these psukim quickly, it seems to be like, you know, everything is basically repetitious over here. You know, you don't see the distinction. But there's a progression, there's a higher level. Chein b'yeinav is very, very important. It will become important later on. If you just remember that. It's very important, it's a very important step. The Pasuk doesn't record anything that's not important. Because it could, see, Pasuk Gimel just tells you that he respected him. He respected him, he saw that he's a man of God. That's not the same as chein. Chein b'yeinav means that he has a certain emotional feeling for the person. He likes him. He likes him. And that's a very, you'll see, that's a very significant development. It could be what saved Yosef's life. The fact that he had chen, had he not had chen be'enav, Yosef might have been killed. Now, vayasharis oso, that's a further promotion. You see what I'm saying? That means he dealt with him personally. He ministered to him personally. That's a further promotion. He's closer to him. Yeah.
What?
Well, chen is really not literally, right? Literally rachamim, but it's the cause of rachamim. You see, what causes a person? In other words, what causes a person most rachamim in the world, most mercy in the world, stems from chen. In other words, you identify. There's a feeling of mercy, a feeling of identification. Yeah. So in the world at large, most the compassion and mercy stems from this emotion of chen. You see, it fits in very well with later on that he could have killed him, but he didn't kill him. You see. And I would Rachman over here is very important in that context. All right, we'll take up this when we get to that point. There's other explanations of why he didn't kill him. Then it says, Vayafti Deo Abeso. That's again, it's a further promotion. You see? Now he made him in charge of his household. He was in charge of all the business that pertained to his household. V'chol yeshlo nasa miyad, that was even more. See, the household is a limited thing. There are things pertaining to that, the running of the household. And he was a big officer, so he must have had a lot of things going on. It wasn't a small household. Because you see later on, there were servants. When she screamed, she called the Anche Abayas. So you see, it was a big operation. It wasn't a small thing. But chol yeshlo means all of his stuff, because he could have separate investments, his whole portfolio. In other words, you see, he went step by step. I said he was very careful, the master. And when he saw that he had talent, he gave him more responsibility. Then when he succeeded, he gave him more. Then chol yeshlo. Now what's he? Vahimei yasif kidoso beveso. And it was from the time that he appointed him in his household. V'al kol asher yeshlo. And everything that he had. V'yavarach Hashem es beis haMitzri b'glal Yosef. And then God caused a blessing to come to the house of the Mitzri due to Yosef. In other words, whatever tremendous blessings occurred, and it was very clear that they were related to Yosef, in other words. He must have experienced great success, unprecedented types of success, and it was related to Yosef, Yosef's ideas, Yosef's suggestions, everything that he suggested worked. Vayhi birkas Hashem b'chol asher yeshlo, and the blessing of God was on everything that he had, b'bayis u'basoda, you see? So bayis and soda. And all areas now, he's having tremendous brachas because of Yosef. Then Vayazov kol asher lo biyad Yosef, v'lo yada ito me'uma kiyem alechem asher ochel. He left everything that was his in the hands of Yosef, and he didn't know of anything except for the bread that he ate. And Yosef was pleasant of form and good looking. Now this is a very interesting pasuk. First of all, what is Vav adding? It would seem that everything we've mentioned until now, right, means we already learned until now that Yosef was in control of everything, right? So what does it mean? So what does Vav add? What new thing does Vav add? Every pasuk should be adding something new. And I showed you step by step how it did until here. What is pasuk Vav adding that's new?
He said that Yosef had total control.
See, there's a difference when you appoint someone. You delegate authority, so you give more authority. And finally, you give the person complete authority. But he's still answerable to you. You still check. In other words, you leave your office in competent hands. You have a manager who's terrific. And you've tested him over. And now he has complete power to sign checks, to authorize expenditures, everything. Yeah, but you're sunning yourself in Florida, having a great time. But you still call in every once in a while. You call in. You want to hear what you do, this and that. You still, right? Vayazov means there was no need. You see, that's a new level. Because for Vayazov, you'd always imagine like this, that it's true that until now I've trusted, the guy's been successful and he's been loyal and has integrity. But maybe that's because I'm checking up on him, so it's because of me. You see? I didn't put this.
It's telling you that being in the position that he was, he's now, it's very easy to get caught up.
Yeah.
It's easy to let go. There you go. So,
I mean, now this becomes a significant thing.
Yeah, well, he's now in this position again, so he hasn't, totally reached that level where he's removed himself.
No. Okay. Well, yes, Mark? Good. All right, you're right.
According to the way Rashi learns, came in Lechem Hashem Ochel, that was the only area where he didn't feel 100% secure, and the reason why is because maybe he felt a little threatened by Yosef because of the fact that he was so good-looking.
Well, where do we see that the master felt threatened by Yosef at any point? But does it show that he feels threatened?
No,
quite the contrary.
No.
I can't buy that. In other words, you don't need to. To posit that, of course, in other words, when we're telling that he gave him total control of everything in the house, and he didn't have anything to do with anything except his own wife, even if Yosef was the ugliest person in the world, I mean, he's not giving his wife to Yosef.
No, the question is the mental attitude towards
he's saying that it should be because he was good looking, that's the reason he
That's why he only gave the wife over, but in regard
to all of his other assets, he felt total security. He said, okay, this guy can take care of everything. Okay?
Yeah, but it doesn't indicate that he was insecure about the lechem. There's no indication of insecurity about the lechem.
What I'm saying, that's why I brought
in
by
Yosef. Nah, but you're positing too much. In other words, the kiyim, you say, the kiyim al lechem is necessary. That's a modification of Vayazav Kol Shelo. You see? Vayazav Kol Shelo is telling you that he put everything in his hands, right? To what extent? To the extent that the only thing he did put in his hands was the food that he ate. Or his wife. I mean, same thing, an extension of the idea. His own personal.
I tell you, when you read without Rashi, I mean, you find the hard to say Rashi's pshat, don't you? That's what Kiyam Alechem is.
No! No! Oh, no. So the pshat of, because that's already, it's a Lashon Nekiyah. You know, that's a Lashon Nekiyah. I mean, why do they have to tell us that? Well, why do they have to tell us that? I don't know. You want to posit that he was jealous of Yosef to a certain extent, or possibly suspicious? I don't know. Yes.
If somebody's suspicious, you wouldn't even let him do anything.
With what?
With regard to anything.
Where does it indicate that?
That's what I'm saying.
It doesn't indicate anything. I think the master had complete confidence in Yosef, and that if you say that Lechem refers to his wife, it makes sense, in other words, that the only thing that he kept to himself, Yosef had access to everything. He had all the books. Everything in the house was open to him, except for those things that can't be shared, like his wife or his own food. But that's it. That's the only place where you draw the line. I think it only is right.
I think it's not such a big question why they mention it either.
Those
times, I mean, they had customs that for example, some more. People were very free.
With what?
I mean, it's not such a big question why it's put here that those were the only things that Potiphar kept himself.
No, it makes sense. It makes good sense. Yeah, I agree with you. You again? Yeah, we got to get some air in here.
It could be the same element that's working as personality, like about dreams. He had this feeling of superiority, and it said he was making his hair and his eyes and everything, right?
Right.
Here also, like you're saying, when he was left completely in control at that point, and now brought out that same element which he had previously, and now it's making that point again. The Rashi is taking place.
That's what Rashi says. Okay, that's Rashi. Okay. Let's do the Rashi. Look, fellas. Rashi.
Himself is in such a high position. I mean, the only way you can say it, if it was an ego that did it. But if he's in such a high position or anything, it's not becoming of a high person to not take care of himself. That's
yes.
The whole thing. I don't think they would mention that if he was taking care of himself because of a high position.
Right.
They mentioned it because they were trying to show you that he got
involved. See, you're right. In other words, like this. To the external world, it may not be clear. You don't know. You know, if a person is in a position of responsibility, he starts to wear very nice clothing. You don't know. But you don't know the effect it has on him. It could be that it's just practical, but it's not an expression of his egotism. Or it could be that it's more than that. It fits into a whole image of himself. He has a whole image of himself, and he's gratifying that image, right? Now, he could justify it. See, he could justify it and say, no, I mean, I have to dress this way. But inwardly, it's a different story. Now, we wouldn't know, unless we analyze the guy very well, but God knows. You see? So Chazal are telling you that in the case of Yosef, it wasn't just done for practicality. You see? It wasn't just done for practicality. Because the truth of the matter, let's analyze. Yeah. It may have started out that way. That's the point. And more than that, he started to eat and drink. It wasn't just that he took care of his parents. So apparently he wasn't eating properly before. Right. So what do you see from this? Let's analyze this. What do you see from this? What happened, in other words, to Yosef? What happened to Yosef? What was the psychological process that Yosef went through when he was sold? In other words, did the Mechira effectuate its objective? Was the Mechira by its nature sufficient to effectuate its purpose? Or wasn't the Mechira was just a prelude to this?
Had to have been because he went on a low. He didn't take care of himself.
You see? All right, you have a good point. See, in other words,
in
that Mechira did create a situation whereby he could, it would break him, but not that inherently is just an external thing. It can only create a situation where he can bring about the change in himself.
Good.
He did not, you see from here, that that change did not occur.
Ah, very good. Very good. In other words, see, what I'm going to try and show is like this. At a certain point, the... Very good.
In other words, it only included the self.
That's it.
We really should have, naturally, should have been upset about the fact that his father...
That's it.
Comment that we see... worthwhile to mention. We see important things about how the Hashgacha operates in general.
Yeah, Naftali said that we see clearly, this has to be this way, that the Hashgacha is right. The Hashgacha will never act to perfect a person. And that's because of the pasuk, not the pasuk. In other words, rather that's in Pirkei Avos, Hakol Bidei Shamayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven, chutz meyira shamayim, with the exception of the fear of God. In other words, God does not do anything for a tzaddik which would bypass or neutralize his bechira. So perfection only comes from the exercise of bechira. The Hashgacha will, however, create certain situations which make it. Will facilitate, in other words. You see, will facilitate the person on the right path. Will provide the background and so forth. So again, I don't know if it came out on the tape before that the factor of Yaakov being an avail is only an indicator of the extent to which he was preoccupied with himself. As Mark said, had he not been so preoccupied with himself, he would have considered the fact of his father, that the father is in mourning, and that would have impeded his own ability to enjoy his new situation. Yes, Mark?
I was curious.
Failure, as Naftali says, the failure is Yosef's. Because according to what Naftali has said, the Ashkacha can give a person an opportunity, if the person doesn't make proper use of the opportunity, so then it's not going to work. I mean, there's still Bechira. Even, in other words, it's possible that as a result of everything, even the second imprisonment, Yosef still might not have emerged perfected, because the Ashgacha gives you an opportunity to work on your emotion. If you don't work on your emotion, then you're not going to perfect yourself, no matter what the situation is. So the first one failed in that sense. It wasn't a failure of the Ashgacha. It was a failure on the part of Yosef. But I would say that it did. It certainly paved the way. Yeah. In other words, it went through two steps. It certainly paved the way. And that when he was in jail, he went through a different process. You see? And in other words, let's put it this way. Even though there was a resurgence and a restoration of his egotism, it was not, I'm sure it wasn't the same as it was originally. He had been chastened by the event. And that it certainly paved the way so that the second time he was imprisoned, he was now in a better position to really work on himself. Now let's take a look at the subsequent story over here. Look at the story. So it says, it was after these things. In other words, after she saw him as a Moshel, he was a Moshel. I guess all these things were attractive to her. The fact that he was a Moshel in power. Power is a very attractive thing to people. They're attracted to power. I mean, even in a sexual sense. I mean, women are attracted to men in power. Power is a very stimulating kind of thing. So she was pretty blunt about it. Very direct approach. And Yosef refused. Now, I want to analyze the manner in which he dealt with the situation. Because it's not such an easy thing. He had to use great chachma, great diplomacy. If you understand the challenge which Yosef faced over here, Yosef refused to do it. It's a wrong. Something he would never do. But at the same time, he's in a very difficult situation. Right? Because he has to deal with her. He can't just tell her to get lost. She's an important person. So he has to be able to find a way of getting his point across that he will get her to give up her desire without producing any consequence. You know, he doesn't want to get her angry at him and make her. At the same time, he can't go to the master either. He can't just go to Potiphar, because that would have, you have to realize, it would be he's in a very difficult situation. He can't go to Potiphar and accuse the wife, because that can lead to tremendous problems. Then the wife will defend herself and call him a liar. he'll be thrown out of the house, or there'll be tremendous problems. On the other hand, he's got to be careful of her vanity over here too. He can't make it appear that she's not desirable to him, or he can't accuse her of being a slut. He's got to be very, very careful. So, because you see, the Torah devotes a few psukim over here. He has a very carefully crafted argument. Let's analyze his argument. Vayomer el eishes adonav, and he said to the wife of his master, "Hein adoni lo yoda iti mababayas. Behold, my master does not even know anything that I do in this house. V'chol asher yesh lo nosam biyadi, and everything that he has, he's placed in my hand. Ain eni gadol b'bayis as any many. There's nobody greater than me in this house. V'lo chosach meni me'uma, and there's nothing lacking. I have nothing lacking in this house. Ki imosach, except for you, b'asher at ishto, because you're his wife. V'yech eseh haro hagdol hazos. How could I do this great evil? V'chotosi le'lokim, and I will sin against God." Now, the question is, how many arguments are there in these psukim? One or two? How many arguments are there? One or two?
Two.
All right, what are the two arguments? Right, right. In other words, the question is, v'chatasi le'lokim, is that the culmination of the first argument? He gives the whole thing over how important he is in the house, right? And there's nothing lacking to me except you. And he said it very carefully, and the only reason is because, not because you're not desirable, but simply because you're his wife. That's an impossibility. Now he says, v'chatasi le'lokim. Now, is v'chatas l'okim the culmination of the argument, or is it a separate argument? Okay, yeah. Well, in other words, v'chatas l'okim would be a little out of context, because it's really a sin against the master. In other words, the whole thrust of his argument is that it would be a terrible sin against the master. That's why I can't do it. And then he says, v'chatas l'okim. So Rashi says like this, v'chatas l'okim. Do you have the Rashi, everybody? B'nei Noach nitztafu al harayos. In other words, the B'nei Noach were commanded concerning the harayos. Harayos are the forbidden sexual relations. Eishes ish. So now he comes into a completely different argument. You see? Now, of these two arguments, which would you think would be the more significant one, the more substantial of the two arguments?
Well, obviously, you thought the first one would be more substantial, but it didn't.
It didn't say it didn't do it. It does not say that the first argument didn't succeed, and no. Then he used this, because it's straight. There's no hefsek between the two.
Then why would you say you just said the first one first?
And of the two, which one is more direct and more substantial? I would say the thing itself is sinful. It's arayos. In other words, like this: the first argument is saying that the thing itself that you're suggesting is not inherently wrong. It's just because of the situation. There's nothing wrong with what you're proposing, but I mean, under the circumstance, you happen to be his wife, and he's placed all of his trust and confidence in me, and he's raised me to the highest position. I can't do this. I'd be sinning against him. That's an indirect kind of an argument. It's lesser. It's a less compelling argument, because what you're saying is that the thing itself is not necessarily so terrible. In other words, in general, when you're trying to convince a person not to do it, right? So you're looking for the most potent reason. The most potent reason is the one which is most direct, which reflects upon the nature of the thing itself. You see, if a person wants to propose something in business, a little maneuver, and you can't really show the 100% that it's illegal, so he says, "Look, I'm not breaking any law." So then you have to look for, but we'll have a bad name and this image. But if you could show the guy that I found the law, it's against the law, that's a stronger argument. So ordinarily speaking, you're always looking for the stronger argument. And here the stronger argument seems to be what? That the thing itself that you're proposing is an impossibility. Because B'nai Noach and stop all the way. It's immoral. It's wrong. The other one is an extraneous thing. Yet Yosef, that's the question basically that Tzvi is asking. In order of presentation, it was just the opposite. Yosef took the other reason, which would seem to me to be the weaker of the two, and that's the one which he really built up. That seems to be in presentation the one that he devoted most of the energy. And the second one comes in later, but Chatos Elokim is the second, that comes in secondarily. Question is why? The argument of Chatos Elokim, a good argument, there isn't a good argument. You see, if you're going to say it's a good argument, it should have been mentioned first, because it's a better argument. Elamai, for whatever reason, because as Mel says, she was bold, she said, "Shichvei me, lie with me," so she didn't care about the Chatasi Lelokim. if she's not in the parsha, that argument is going to be effective. So don't mention it at all. Don't weaken your case. Don't weaken your case by bringing it in. So I'm saying either or should have been in, or it shouldn't have been in. All right, Solomon? If it fails, doesn't mean anyway. Even if Hashgacha is not directly involved, in other words, very often, any situation, a person can make the right move. A person makes the right call, even La'avdil in sports or something. There's always Monday morning quarterbacks. But in retrospect, you can say that the person made the right choice, and it didn't work. He made given the facts that he had at his right at his disposal, he made the correct decision, and he still... Not the rationality. The test of rationality is not that it succeeds in every case. It just means to say that on the whole, it's the best tool we have, and all things being equal, it's the one that's going to guarantee you the greatest success in life. But you can't test. You can't say in every particular case. In other words, one guy could have a rational plan, and the other guy says, "No, let's do something else." And it's totally crazy. So one guy follows the rational plan, and he fails. The other guy does the crazy thing, and it just happened to work. So you'll say that. So now we should look for crazy, wild emotions. That's how we should go. No one's going to say that because, he would say that. In the long run, he's going to be a failure. You'll see. That person will fail. Because no one's going to adopt that as a method. Now, here, Yosef had to lose. Let me see.
Second, sorry. He's
considered to be the Chachma of Yosef, and basically along the lines that Mel suggested. The thing is like this, that the argument that it's immoral, right? He couldn't have started out with that argument. Why? Because whenever a person has an emotional desire for something, so why is it why are certain emotional, why do we say that they're bad? Because it's not the desire per se, but desire always affects the person's thinking. In other words, when a person has a desire for something, so then he feels, but it's wrong. He feels guilty. He has a conflict. So then if the desire is powerful enough, so it causes a distortion of his reasoning. It breaks down the concept in his mind. So it's not. He starts to rationalize, and then he works out that really it's such a terrible thing. And then he can do it. Because if he can't rationalize it, then he can't enjoy it, because he's going to feel guilty. So before a person follows an emotional desire, he first has to break down the category that's impeding him in his mind. Everybody has a certain category of right and wrong. So even the most wicked people have to work out rationalizations that what they're doing is really right. You see, if you study Rishayim, I'm Hitler, Yavach Shemo, or today the Gaddafi, Khomeini's, all these, the crazy, the PLO, whatever it is, they'll present, they have a whole thing worked out, that their grievances and how they're no matter how crazy the arguments are, in their own mind, they have it worked out that what they want is really justified. So therefore, when you're dealing with a person, and you see this person is as an emotional attachment to something which is wrong, you have to recognize that emotion will break down the category which opposes it in their own mind. So what was her desire? Her desire was to commit adultery. So therefore, in her own mind, adultery itself is not such a bad thing. She had to rationalize it away. Whatever the reasons she used, whatever her arguments, it doesn't matter. The very fact that she had that desire means that she had weakened that whole category, that this is that adultery per se, the chatasi lelokim, is an evil, was broken down. It wasn't an evil in her mind at that point. So Yosef could not go directly to appeal to that. That's what Mel said. She said, shich fa'imi, that's it. So apparently she knew it was adultery, and she had worked it out already. It wouldn't be so bad. So when you're dealing with a person, and you want to convince them not to do something that they have a desire for, but to utilize the argument that it's wrong is difficult, because they've broken down, what do you do? Sometimes there's another way. And that is, you could show that the thing you're proposing is wrong for a different angle. You see? Now, that other angle, the category with regard to that other angle could be intact. For example, her desire was not to wrong the master. In other words, her desire was only to have the sexual enjoyment. So that category is broken down, you see? So say, but you'll admit, so having an affair, like today's society, can justify any kind of sexual thing. Whatever reason, as long as you enjoy it, get on holiday, they can justify any kind of thing. So I can't argue with you on that. You see, you take a person like today, that wants to have such a thing. Put yourself in today's society. Okay, so I can't argue, so you're right here, according to your morality, it's not such a terrible thing. But you'll agree that when somebody places their trust in you, and raises you to a high position, and shows you so much confidence, and so on and so forth, that to stab that person in the back, you'll agree that's wrong, won't you? Now the person will agree, because their emotion is not to stab somebody in the back. You see? So that's the only approach that you could use. In other words, let's forget about the sexual morality. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Like in today's society, they all agree that it's a terrible thing to double-cross somebody after they've placed them. Can you imagine if somebody picked you up from from being a slave and gave you a promotion and put confidence there, and to turn around now after he's put his confidence in me and to slap him in the face, that she would have, you see, that she could, her mind could still see that that itself was an evil because her emotion was not directed towards harming the husband. If her emotion was directed towards harming the husband, then that category would have been broken down. So that's why he used that argument first. You see? Now why did he bring in the second argument? Because once the person can admit that, that you see, you break down the fantasy they have, that this fantasy that you have is not such a good thing, it has a negative side, so they begin to withdraw, to detach themselves a certain amount from it, now they're prepared to hear that maybe the thing inherently is no good. You see, you have to work in two phases. In the first phase, you can't go and talk about the morality. They're not ready to hear it because they're all their defenses, their rationalizations. So first you have to find another way to pry them loose, to take a whole different, they think it's so terrific, they want it, everything is good about it, there's nothing that's bad about it. So first you have to show them that you missed the complete fact over here. What you're proposing is a terrible evil. Once they can see that the thing that they're proposing is a terrible evil, so that already diminishes the emotional attachment. Now it's not such a great thing. Then, to solidify it, you see, now you come in with the direct approach. And it just so happens that in addition to that, it's completely immoral. It's breaking down a moral category. After they hear the first argument, then they're ready for the second argument, even though the second argument is a more powerful one, you see, logically speaking, but emotionally you can't use a direct approach. It's a very important lesson to know, practically speaking, because a lot of times when people get into discussions or you're trying to reason with a person, it could be a friend or it could be a child or a student, whatever it is, and you're trying to talk them out of doing something which is crazy. And no matter how rational you are, right? It's like talking to a brick wall. Why? Because all the resistances are in effect. And then it's if you should just take a step away from the situation, if you can find another angle. Okay, let's forget about this. But the thing you're proposing will create a problem in a different area. An area where the resistance, where the emotion is not working, then you have a chance. And once you detach them in that area, then you can go for the direct area. So the indirect approach is a very important thing. You see, Yosef operated with great chachma over here. As we said, of course, it didn't work. Because, I mean, there's no guarantee when you're dealing with emotions. First of all, as I said, it was the Ashkacha that he should be thrown to jail. But even if it wasn't the case, you're dealing with human emotions. I mean, there's no guarantee that it's always going to work. If the emotion is that powerful, if the person is that blinded, that's all they can see, then nothing you're going to say is going to help. That shouldn't deter us. Yosef had to use his chachma and operate in the most rational way.
You got it. Seems like it did put her up.
I mean, we don't know exactly what her emotions were and all that, but it does seem that it, well, it says, Kadabra Elov Yom Yom. She kept talking. Kadabra Yosef, they were battling feud. Kadabra Yosef Yom Yom, Velo Shomei Lo. In other words, this didn't really stop her. It didn't really stop her. She continued to try and talk to him. You see? And he wouldn't listen. But at that stage of the game, perhaps he might, you know, after a certain amount of time would have gone by, he would have been there. But it was the incident, you see, that we'll take up next time. That incident when they were alone that day, you see, perhaps that's what the Ashkacha brought about. How the Ashkacha worked over there could be that the way that they were alone together in that house, and she became bolder. He didn't really talk her out of it. Had it not been for that incident of being alone that day, though it's possible that the thing would have blown over. Because she kept persisting and Yosef kept refusing and nothing would have happened. But the incident triggered it off. Once they had that incident, so then Yosef, you know, he had lost the control over the situation. He wound up in jail. Now what happened, part two, we'll take up next week. Okay? Back in Horatius over here. And we said we were studying the whole design of the Hashgacha, as far as Yosef from Mitzrayim. Specifically, we said that his tshuva came about in two phases. First, he was sold as a slave, and it would seem that would have been enough. But then later, God brought about an incident to cause him to be thrown into jail. So we wanted to know why. So we said that the original reaction to being sold as a slave was that his ego was broken down. And we saw that from the fact that it's only after he became successful in the house of Potiphar, it says, then he began to, Rashi says, once he saw himself a Moshe, he was a ruler, so he began to eat and drink and take care of his hair. And then God said, your father is mourning, he's an avail for you in Canaan, and you're taking care of your looks, you're only concerned about your looks. So Miyad, immediately, God said he will sick the bear upon him, and the bear is the wife of Potiphar, and then he has that incident. Now, so we said that, as Naftali put it, that the Hashgacha doesn't effectuate, doesn't bring about the tshuva in and of itself. It provides a person with the situation, with the opportunity in which he can examine his own emotions. He has to work on himself. But if he doesn't work on himself, then the situation per se will not cure him. So Yosef's first response was a situational thing. In other words, as a result of being sold, so there was a depletion of the ego. His ego had nothing to attach itself to. But that's not a change in the nature of the person. The underlying emotion remained. It's just that he had nothing to attach itself to. So once he began to re-experience success, you see, he had apparently this image of being a Moshe, then the old feelings of egotism, of that the sense of overestimation of the self returned, and it was expressed by the fact that he took care of his appearance. Now, the question is, so what did the Hashgacha do in order to bring Yosef back to the right path? What did it do? Yeah, well, in other words, how does it operate? Mida keneged mida, that God will bring upon him this woman. Well, how is that going to effectuate his change?
Well, it was perfect. It was the perfect.
Well, yeah, how does it work?
The man was looking for perfect. You had to get him to perfection.
So what was the plan, in other words? So now, in order to counteract this, God brought upon him the so-called bear, and which is the fact that the wife of Potiphar took an attraction to him. And that itself should be analyzed, and the surface is strange. I mean, why would that? If anything, that would cater to a person's... It would only increase a man's ego. The fact is that not only is he so successful and everything, but the wife of the master is now has this tremendous attraction. She can't live without him. So, alright, so yes, he says, but that was just a means to an end. The real objective was that he should be thrown into jail.
Well, that was
and this just happened to be.
The thing is, that was the very thing
I was making. That really the objective was to get him thrown into jail. But how the particular medium which God chose, that it should come about through the attraction of Potiphar's wife, also makes sense, because that would be something, there was a value in that. In that, that situation was brought about by the fact that he became excessively involved in his appearance. So that caused them to become attracted to him. So Yosef could recognize and trace it back. In other words, when God punishes a person, he does it in a way that the person can recognize. Okay, that's not bad. But let's go on. Let me just raise another issue over here. It's not the most pressing issue in the world, but it is a question that the Mefarshim addressed themselves to. And that is the reaction of Potiphar. In other words, you see, when she was spurned, you know, they say that, what is it, hell hath no fury like a woman who's spurned? When
scorned,
I'm sorry. You got to be careful. You see, Yosef was very careful when he resisted her advances. He recognized that there's a tremendous danger, there's emotional dynamite over here. So when she was rejected, and she had managed to grab his cloak, so she immediately had a desire for revenge, because she was tremendously humiliated, and she couldn't tolerate that, so she wanted to destroy Yosef. Her objective was to destroy Yosef, and she did it in a very shrewd way, because it says that, what did she do? In Pasuk Yedalim, it says that she now had his cloak, she called the men of the house. Men of the house means the household staff. He had a hold of the servants, the staff. He was an important person. And she said to them, "See, Havi Lanu Ish Ivri. He's brought us a Jewish man, L'tzachek Banu, to laugh at us. Boy Lai Lishkavimi. He came to me to lie with me, V'ekra B'kol Gadol. And I called out in a loud voice." In other words, so what did she played upon, apparently there must have been a great deal of envy against Yosef by the members, because she played upon that. She said that See, my master has brought an issue of Ivri Letzachik Banu to laugh at all of us. This person is an affront to everybody. He's a stranger, and Ivri, who they look down upon. The Egyptians look down upon the Jews, the Ivrim. And this is the way he treats us. He's laughing at us. Then it says that go now to Pesach Yudzayin.
Well, even Yudal
is another thing, maybe. Yeah, what's that? When her husband came home, so it says, Vatadavar Elov, Kadvarma Ela Lemor. And she said to him now, her husband, these things, the same words, basically the same words, Bo Eli Ho Eved Ho Ivri, the Jewish, see, she called him an Eved Ivri, he's just a servant over here, this servant, Ashe Vesalon Alatzachek B, that you brought here to make fun out of me. See, here she didn't mention everybody else. She just mentioned herself. You brought this person down to humiliate me. And it was when I raised my voice and I called out, and he left his garment here with me and he ran outside. And it was when his master heard the words of his wife that she said to him, these things did your servant do to me? Bayicharapo. And he got very angry. So he was very angry. And then it says that he took Yosef and he put him in jail. Now, obviously, there's a very strong question over here. And what's the question?
Should
he have? Yeah, the question is, I mean, if what she says is true, if she deserved to be killed. And I don't think that they had too many problems in Egypt at that time, like in America, that with the death penalty and the civil liberties groups, right, and all the... all these groups that are against the death penalty and so forth, I don't think there would be much of a problem to have him killed. By the way, you see later on, we're going to see this. I'm going to take it up. You see later on, the Ramban says that for Yosef to approach the butler and the baker when they had their dreams and to offer to interpret their dreams, he was putting his life in his hands. Because it shows you something about Yosef. We're going to take it up. Because he says they were extremely powerful people. And if he would have been wrong, for example, he said that the baker is going to be killed in 3 days. Paro is going to take off your head in 3 days. Now, had he been wrong about that, the baker would have had him killed. Because of the agony, who are you, a chutzpahnik, to come and talk? You present yourself as a dream interpreter and you put me in this state of agony, I'm going to be killed. And then if he would have survived, so Yosef was extremely confident. But it goes to show you, though, that if that's the case, then certainly his master could have had him killed. His master could have had him killed for something which is more serious. I mean, attempting to rape his wife, he certainly would have been killed for that. So the question is, why didn't he kill him? Why did you put him in jail? That's the question. Anybody have any suggestions? I think on the basis of the shiur last week, I think we have the foundations to answer this question. The basic information. What would you say? All the Mefarshim talk about it, and I think basically they're all saying the same thing. And that is, in my opinion, Potiphar did not really believe his wife's story. He didn't really believe that it was true. Because, first of all, if he did, he would have conducted some kind of an investigation. You don't see any questioning of Yosef over here. You see also that Potiphar was a very careful person. You see how he watched every step of his progress along the way, how Yosef was successful. And not only saw that God was with Yosef, and that he entrusted him. I mean, he saw that this person we discussed last week, he saw all the qualities that he had, in terms of his wisdom, in terms of his integrity, in terms of his honesty, right? Also, another thing is very important. If you take a look at Pasuk Dalet, Lamed Tes Dalet, Vayimsa Yosef Chein Bi'einav. Yosef found Chein Bi'einav. What's Chein? As you pointed out, Mark. Vashkach Yosef Rachamin. In other words, Rachman means mercy. It means to say that it wasn't just an objective recognition of Yosef, but he had a personal emotional feeling for him. He liked him. He had a strong feeling of affection for Yosef. And that's what I'm saying. That if you take a look at all the Mefarshim, for example, Eben Ezra says, what? He says that that he got angry. He says, nevertheless, he didn't kill him because the matter was a suffix to him. So Ibn Ezra says simply the matter was a suffix to him. The Sfarno goes further. The Sfarno says he didn't believe him.
He says that he got, why did he get angry? He got angry because she accused him of making a joke out of her. That he brought down this Ishivri to make a joke out of them. But he says he wasn't angry at Yosef because he believed Yosef more than his wife. But when he had, you see, the thing is, the Ramban says the same thing more or less. If you go through the whole Ramban, he argues with Rashi over there, because Rashi is a very strange Rashi. Because Rashi says, it says, when she said to her husband, he did to me like these things.
Right.
Like these things, meaning to say that Rashi says that she mentioned while they were having relations. Like these things, in other words. She pointed out to him while they're having relations.
To get him angry.
Ramban doesn't like that pshat at all. Ramban disagrees very strongly. He says because the Ramban says that she never would have told. She told everybody that she escaped from his clutches, that he tried to rape her or seduce her, and she escaped, and she called out in a loud voice. But now to admit to her master that she had allowed him to go so far as to actually have relations with her, then the master would have been angry at her, and maybe had her killed. Why didn't you run away? Why did you allow this to happen? You see? So the Ramban doesn't like that pshat, but nevertheless Rashi says that, because apparently I would deduce from this that Rashi holds that he really was angry at Yosef. He really was angry at Yosef.
Right.
And the reason why he was angry is not because objectively, but because she maneuvered him into a situation.
Right.
She taunted him.
Yeah, but the thing is,
while she was having relations with him, she taunted him to get him angry and jealous.
She really had to get him to a certain point.
Right.
If for her to do such a thing, she had to get him really...
Right. But the Ramban doesn't... You go through the Ramban yourself. You'll see he has very strong arguments against Rashi. And he says that the reason why didn't he kill him is because he liked him. V'hinei me'avas adonav es Yosef. He loved Yosef. He didn't kill him because of that. Or he says that it was an ace, it was a miracle. Right? Or he says that he doubted her words because of the tzidkus of Yosef. Because of Yosef's tzidkus. That's my personal opinion. My personal opinion is that he didn't really believe it. He did not believe it because of two factors. Because he knew Yosef very well, and it just didn't fit into the character of Yosef whatsoever. You see? Because he saw Yosef's integrity and his righteousness, and it just didn't make any sense.
Once I said,
why you put him in jail? You're right. The thing is also he had chen. He had favor. Also, I would say another thing is that for a woman to behave this way, a woman to behave the way she did, I would say that there's very good reason to assume that this was not that. Yeah, he knew her too. If she's the kind of person that could do that, this would not have been the first indication that she has emotions in this area. He would have known about it, Potiphar. You know what I mean? So he would have had some reason to suspect his wife, and he had no reason to suspect Yosef. But the only thing is like this, he had no choice. Politically speaking, he had to do something because she had made a whole big issue out of it now. How could you leave? In other words, she had involved all the people in the household, and she made it into a whole big thing. It's a matter of pride. You see what I'm saying? In other words, the husband had no choice now but to get rid of Yosef. So what he did was he put him in the Beis HaSohar. He put him in jail where he still had a relationship with him. He could still watch over him. And you see, he did watch over him. He allowed him to be in a good situation. And if he wanted to have Yosef destroyed, he could have had him destroyed. First of all, he could have killed him right away. And if he wanted not to kill him right away, he could have put him in a jail. There's other kinds of jails. He put him in jail. This is like the jails... The federal prisons where it's,
tennis court.
Right? Yeah, with the tennis court, the country clubs, right? All the top guys went there. This was not the Alcatraz, what is it, in Rikers Island, or what's the one in Rowway? This is not the jail where, you have to be afraid to go to. So he could have done away with him. My opinion is that that's the real thing. Really, he did not believe it then, of the Ashkacha. How does this help to effectuate a tshuva within Yosef? So on the first level, what would you say? In other words, like this, that what caused Yosef's ego to become reawakened was that he saw himself as a Moshe. In other words, the sense of mastery. That's what Yosef's ego attached itself to. Too, the image of being a master. A master is one who's in complete control. He has the capacity to control the environment. So what happened over here? What happened over here?
He did the best.
He doesn't have control. That's right. In other words, it showed that no matter how much you do, right, you can't control the situation. Because there's other factors that you have no control over. Here she comes, somebody comes along with this emotion and this and that, and before you know it, first you're on top of the world, and now you're in jail. So that would be an excellent thing, which would give him the opportunity to question his whole premise. So now you have Yosef in jail. Let's study the story. Because, in other words, in this stage, Yosef underwent a different kind of an experience than he had gone through before. Now let's see what happens over here in jail. Pick up the Chumash. Everybody have the Chumash? Vayikach in Chav. Vayikach Adonai Yosef also. And Yosef's master took him. And he put him in the prison. The place where the prisoners of the king were locked up. And he was there in the jail. See, the pasuk goes out of its way to tell you it was a special prison. It wasn't for ordinary common criminals. And then it says, now it's very interesting because he goes through, it seems like a repeat of what took place in the house of Potiphar. He begins to win people's trust and he begins to succeed even in jail. It seems like a repeat of the same thing. But look at the pasuk very carefully. It says that God was with Yosef and caused and gave him and favored and showed him chesed, compassion, showed Yosef compassion. And God placed his chen is what we saw before, the affection. And God placed his affection in the eyes of the sar, of the warden of the jail. And the warden of the jail placed in the hands of Yosef all of the prisoners that were in the jail. Same thing again, now he's in charge of all the prisoners. This man can't stand still. Wherever he goes, people give him responsibility. And everything that they did there was done with him. In other words, under his control now. He's starting to control the whole prison. The same thing. He's in control again of Moshe. Then, again, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Ein sar beis asoa roeh. The warden did not even see anything that was in his hand due to the fact that God was with him. And whatever he did, God caused to succeed. So it's in miniature. It's the same thing that happened with Potiphar. He gives him responsibility, then he gives him more responsibility, and finally, the warden doesn't have to come to work anymore because everything, he doesn't even check anymore. The same thing with Potiphar. He doesn't even have to check on him anymore. He has total control. So it would seem a bit strange because if the purpose of the Ashgacha was to really deflate the ego and to give him a chance to really uproot the emotion, it seems that the Ashgacha over here is working to make him successful. But what is the difference between this case? What is the difference between this case? There's a very key difference, I say, between this case and the case by Potiphar. In both cases, let's focus on the chayim. In both cases, the end result was that Yosef succeeded in both situations due to chayim. You have to realize, by the way, the importance of the emotional factor. See, people don't realize this. People think that it's just talent per se. Or it's just achievement per se. That's a true thing. But usually it goes along with chen. In other words, if you succeed because you latch onto somebody and he propels you, gives you opportunities, it's not only because of your abstract abilities, but you got to find favor. Usually it's chen is a very important thing. Now, you can't find favor in the guy's eyes if you have no talent. I mean, you're dealing with an important person or a successful businessman. Right. A successful businessman, I mean, he's not going to get close to you if he doesn't find some good qualities, but you see very often it's not just the qualities, but there's got to be some personal element, identification. He identifies with you, maybe he sees himself within you or whatever it is, and it's the personal emotional thing which cements the thing. When you find favor, that's a very, very significant thing. You have to be aware of that. And if you act in a certain way, like you're arrogant or hostile, this and that, you're unfriendly, and you figure, look, I don't have to be friendly, I do the job well, I'm talented. Well, politics always, there are certain situations where you're right, there are certain people that don't care. It's pure business. But in this world, people, even technicians or businessmen, whatever it is, leaders, emotion plays a role. Chen. So you see that in both cases, Yosef was propelled because he found chen. But what? There's one difference over here. There's a signal. What's the difference? Take a look at both cases. Yeah, go ahead. In other words, in the first case,
so you're supposed to realize that it wasn't through his own ability.
Exactly, very good. In the first case, he found favor in his eyes. It didn't say that God brought it about. It wasn't the result of the Ashkacha. It was rather a result of Yosef's own action and Yosef's success. Because first it says that he was very successful, and he was in the house of the Potiphar, and that everything that he did was successful. Then it said, Vayimtza Yosef chen v'einav, and Yosef found favor in his eyes. So the way it came about was the achievement of Yosef, that Yosef acted in such a way that he found favor in his eyes, so Yosef could take the credit for it. But over here, what does it say? It says that God was with Yosef, and God displayed chesed to Yosef, right? And what was the chesed? That he placed favor in the eyes of the Sar Beis HaSoar. That came first. The favor came first. And then, as a result of that favor, he gave him opportunities, and Yosef utilized them. And so Yosef saw very clearly, that the success that he achieved in prison was not due to his own actions. Of course it was related to his own actions. You see what I'm saying? But the underlying cause was what? Was the chain. And that chain was something which he couldn't take credit for. You follow? In the case, you see, in the first case, what he did wrong, what Yosef did wrong in the first case with Potiphar, was that he took the credit for his success. And he began to feel the sense of being a Moshe, of being a ruler, of being a commander. See, in the second case, he saw right away. How did he know? Because he saw right away that there was... See, Yosef was very intelligent. He didn't fool himself. He saw right away that this person took a liking to him. And it was because he took a liking to him that he gave him the opportunities. You see? So therefore, he could never take the full credit. He could never take the full credit because it wasn't due. The whole thing, in other words, the whole... it's like a person. See, you talk to a person. It's interesting. People's attitudes change after they have success. When a person is struggling and he's trying to get a break, so he talks one way, right? But then you'll see that, let's say a person's achieved a certain success. So he likes to talk about it. That he was struggling and there were no opportunities. Then all of a sudden he made this move and then he made that move and this thing. And he looks back how fantastic he was and how he exploited every opportunity that came his way and he gained command and what a tremendous success he is. And then if somebody was around... You see, let's say if usually people tell this, you know, they tell it to people that weren't around at the time.
These old idiots usually.
You know, these old guys tell it that way, right. But let's say there's an old friend of his, you know, a partner, one of his partners that was there, and he says, yeah, but wasn't it true that your real thing was didn't go anywhere, and you had, and this other guy came along and did you a tremendous favor, and that's the thing that got you started. And if it wasn't for that, then all that was, oh yeah, forget about that, wasn't important, you know, like that they forgot about. In other words, you see, when a person is failing in this world, so then extraneous factors, he attributes tremendous extraneous factors. It's not his fault. It's because this is no good, and the market is no good, and the weather is no good, and the climate is no good. The whole world stinks. You see? Yeah. But when a person becomes successful, all of a sudden there's no... Or that other guy, this guy is stopping me, this guy is envious of me, so he won't give me a chance, and everybody in the world. When a guy is successful, then there's no other people in the world. You see? When he's successful, then it's completely his own. They say something like that. Like failure has a lot of partners, right? Something like that. A lot of partners, but success is an orphan. Something like that. I think it works the other way. Whatever it is. The point of it is, though, that in his own mind now, he diminishes. Because see, why? Why is that so? Because very obviously, because his whole desire is to feel that he's great, to feel a sense of greatness about himself. But if you would analyze it correctly, if a person would live in the world of reality, then he could never have the sense of greatness about himself because it could never be justified. Just like God said to the Jews when they're about to enter the land of Israel, so he says to them, do not think because of your righteousness that I'm going to throw them out, disinherit them, and give you this land. It's not because of your righteousness. See? Or it's not because of your qualities. It's only because of the promise to the Avos. So in other words, God was saying you should never be able to justify any feelings of nationalism, of superiority. Because you're not being chosen for any inherent quality that you have. It's just an accident of having to be... God had to work out a system, and there was the best way to have the children of the others. It's nothing for you to be proud about. You didn't do anything about it. The same thing is true in every area. The feeling that a successful person has about himself is not warranted by reality. Because if he would take into consideration all of the accidental phenomena that were essential to bring it about, then he couldn't have this feeling anymore. Because she knew very well that every step along the way, it was this could have happened, that could have happened, this accident, and the other person found favor, and he agreed, and he helped you, but he blots out what the other guy did for him. And suddenly, he's a tremendous person. He knows how to do this, and who taught you? Who taught you how to do this? Oh, somebody taught him. Yeah, but of course. The thing is, you see, that's the problem over here. That Yosef began to feel he was a ruler. And that's a false feeling. And that's what fed into his original egotism. You see? And he was able to look at the situation and blot out all the other factors. Because he was able to attribute it all to his own greatness. He rose from nothing. He rose from nothing. He was a slave. And he utilized the opportunities and so on and so forth. You see? But you have to realize one thing. That in his rise to success, a key development was the chen. The fact that he found chen. Chen means it was an emotion. And an emotion in somebody else is something which you can't control. You can't control other people's emotions. So that's a clear indicator that the amount that you can accomplish in this world due to your own ability is limited.
I think you're wrong. You can't control someone's emotions.
It's true that a smart person can affect other people's emotions, can control them in certain cases, but in a very, very limited way. It's impossible to have total control in that area. It's absurd.
That's true.
He did things to get him to like him. But he should have realized that there's no way that you can take credit that's due to certain accidents beyond your control. That ultimately speaking, it's due to certain accidents beyond your control. You follow? In other words, there's nobody, no matter what you do, there are certain people, certain girls, whatever it is, that you can be the sharpest, that you're sharpest, and you're wittiest, etc., and they just don't go for you. They're not turned on for you. Because ultimately, it depends upon other factors. That's why when people...
Well, not if you knew how they work.
The thing is like this. You should realize that it's limited. If anybody has this idea, then it's totally crazy. Nobody. The science of psychology is very, very incomplete. Nobody has that ability to control somebody else that completely. That was that. You see that in the story, by the way, of Purim in the Megillah. That's the Russia that he wanted to have complete control over Vashti. He wanted her at his disposal, and he thought he had complete control. And she resisted, and she even lost her life. But nevertheless, that was a blow to him. That shows that you can't have complete control over other people because people have their own desires, their own emotions. Now, certainly in this area, yes, if you're dealing with people, you can use psychology. But I assure you that with all the psychology in the world, you think you're so clever, you can't control other people's emotions. To a certain extent, sometimes you'll be successful, sometimes you won't. But you should recognize that even when you're successful, it's not completely due to you. It's because of certain accidents that he had. He happens to have certain disposition already. If it wasn't for that, then you can't do it, exactly. If you think you can't, it's crazy. I mean,
all disposition.
That's what you don't know. No, you can't know. Every person's all disposition. It's an impossibility. It's an impossibility. Even your own wife, even your own child. I mean, take a look in reality all around you. I mean, people that you're the closest to. You don't know how a person is going to act in every situation we have. If you think you can, you're fooling yourself. I know sometimes I can predict. Watch, I'll do this and this and you'll see how she'll react. In a certain limited sphere, it's possible to do so. In a certain limited sphere, and even then. But you can't have complete control.
So it's when you deal with the emotions also, the emotions are very temporary.
They're temporary, change. Quantitative.
It can be depending on moods a lot of times. Right. So that's affected by something totally out of your control. You have a person with an aggressive tendency, and the other day, something happened which went beyond.
That Yosef had done that. In other words, that when Yosef was successful, and he still had that emotional desire to view himself as being a great person, so he needed something to attach it to, so that's how he interpreted the situation. The situation was one which lent itself to that on the surface. On the surface, it lent itself to that. He could look back at a situation and feel pride in what he had accomplished. He had come from slavery, and now he was a master. And he had earned the favor of all around him. And that's something that he earned. He could take credit for that. But two events occurred. In other words, the first breach in that is, as Yossi said, was that all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, he was struck down by somebody else's emotion. So you see that you don't have complete control over a situation. The wife of Potiphar, her emotion came into the picture. And even though that emotion was one that what? That was an attraction to him, yeah, but it's one which he couldn't put him in a position. He had no control. He had lost complete control over the situation because there was nothing that he could do. He couldn't go to Potiphar, and he tried to push her off, and it's an emotion which, and he had no control over human emotions. because by putting her off, he got her angry. And once he got her angry, she tried to destroy him. He had no control over the situation. He was left without any options. Then in jail, you see, then in jail what happens is Vayitein Chino, he sees right away that this guy took a liking to him. Ah, so then, of course, he used his abilities. He was rational. I mean, he was rational, and he did the best that he could do. But it was no longer the same. He could no longer look at the situation, his success in prison, as he had before, because now he saw clearly that the whole thing emanated from one thing, from Chayin, and that Chayin is something that had nothing to do with anything that he achieved. He saw it. You see, because he saw it happen right away. You see, you should be smart about that. In other words, like this, when a person, I always tell guys about dates, when they go out on dates, you see, and first of all, they do everything possible to prepare for a date. You know, like you get dressed the best, you know, and your hair has to be perfect, and everything has to match, and then you're nervous, you're extremely nervous. Why? Because you're worried. You know, will you say the right thing, and intelligent things, the whole thing. Right? And then, if a guy succeeds, he feels tremendous. And if he flops, then he feels miserable. I say the whole thing is really irrational. First of all, you should put a certain amount of effort to making a decent appearance. You shouldn't go like a slob. That's crazy. Right? But the extent that people get involved in particulars is not warranted. It will have no effect whatsoever. You see? In your own mind, you take a look at the mirror. You take a look at the mirror, and if you see two hairs, please, you see two hairs out of place, you get nervous already, you get upset. Now, first of all, that's completely crazy, even in an ordinary situation, because nobody, when you make an impression on someone, the impression is a general impression. Nobody studies every particular. If you have a girl that's going to study every little hair on your head, then she's neurotic. Then you don't want to. In other words, you can only make a certain impression. You can only be... look a certain way, the particulars add very little already. It's just the general impression. And the girl will not notice. The girl just sees a general impression of a person. That's the first thing.
I've seen a lot of people who have things like...
attempt to make an impression on the other person. Now I'm saying like this. Another reason why it doesn't make that much sense to invest all this is because ultimately you don't have that much control over the girl's reaction. You have very little control. Because her reaction is not going to be determined that much by the reality of what you are. Our reaction is going to be determined by forces in our unconscious. She already has an unconscious image in her mind of the figure that she's looking for, which has been... straight is that the thing is like this. It's not really you that the girl is looking at, but the question is how you will affect a certain image that she has in her mind. That's why if she loves you, you see, if a girl goes to you, usually it's right away. But so a guy feels terrific. She loves me. You see? Like I've been picked. The answer is, if it happened that quickly, then it can't be you that she loves. How could it be? She doesn't even know you. You see? If a girl falls in love with you at first sight and you feel fantastic about it, the whole thing is irrational. Because she didn't fall in love with you at all because she doesn't even know you. And in fact, when she does get to know you, it's not going to be so fantastic. Things are going to change. You see? The love is contingent upon the not knowing. Because it means to say that it triggered off an image in her mind, and that's what she falls in love with. She's projecting, she's making you into a certain figure that she's searching for in her mind. It has very little to do with the real you. And therefore, at the same time, when you're rejected, if the girl doesn't fall in love with you, you shouldn't feel rejected. Because it's not you that's been rejected, because she doesn't even know you. It just means to say that you don't happen to trigger off that image in her mind. But why should you feel bad about that? Because that's something that you have no control whatsoever over, something like that. And it doesn't go, by the way. In your own mind, you say, see, it's very important for people not to get depressed about these things. In your own mind, you say, well, if she rejected me, then there means there's something wrong with me. But it's totally the most irrational thing. Because how could it be, it doesn't make sense, how could it be that you can't have any control over something?
Well, it could be something wrong with your technique.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All things being equal, I'll tell you this, all things, of course, I'm not saying... Now, I don't mean to go so far as to say that it has nothing to do with how you act on the dating situation. That's absurd. I don't mean to say that. Of course, how you act is important. It's very important. But it's only important insofar as it relates to this image that she is looking for. You see? Now, if you... all things being equal, in other words, if you don't make a fool out of yourself, right? Or you're not obviously mean or rude or act ridiculously, of course she's not going to be able to go for you. Believe me, though, I've said, if you have that quality, if you trigger off that image, then you can make a lot of, quote, mistakes or whatever it is, not be that well-dressed, and not be so terrific, and not be so cheerful, and you'll make it. She'll like you. You'll have, you know, the relationship, there'll be a relationship. On the other hand, you could be at your best and be fantastic, and she won't go for you. And then you'll see a few months later she's going with the schleppy guy that doesn't compare to you, at least in your own mind. And why? Because take a look at her father, and you'll see. Therefore, it's a very important. It's very important in general to have the correct attitude when you go into these things. A rational person will do the rational things. He'll make a nice appearance, not go crazy. Going overboard is not recalled for. And you'll try and be friendly and intelligent and reasonable, and that's it. And then don't worry about it. Because it's like it's either in the cards or it's not in the cards. It's very little. Don't overestimate the amount that you can do to win it, to make it or break it. Don't overestimate, and don't feel that you've been personally rejected. You have not been personally rejected. She doesn't even know you. She doesn't know your philosophy of life, and so forth. That's a very important musa haskel. Now, I would say, getting back to this situation over here, that in prison it operated in a different way. That two things. First of all, Yosef saw that his whole idea of being a Moshe was completely broken down. And how is it broken down? Because the whole thing was phony, to begin with. To begin with, he was a Moshe only, not because he had complete control over a situation, all the control in the world. He was just fortunate that he was dealing with a guy that was subject to having chayim. If it would have been a different guy, do you mean to tell me that anybody in that situation would have had chayim for Yosef? I say no. No. Because there are many people that you'll work for, and you'll be just as successful and just as terrific, and you won't find favor in their eyes. There's no emotional chemistry.
So the case in jail made him reflect back?
Yes. Well, two things made him reflect back. First of all, the incident with Potiphar. See? That he felt completely secure, and then all of a sudden he recognized that it's not the case. That there's very... I mean, what kind of security is this? What kind of accomplishment? What kind of achievement is this? That in no time, because of somebody's emotion, because of a human emotion comes into the picture and knocks off the whole thing. It's not much of a Moshe. That was the first step. Now, in jail, what happened was that all of a sudden he begins to receive assignments. And he now has a chance to be successful. But this time, clearly, it hit him right off the bat. That he knew that why is this happening? Because this guy likes me. And why does this guy like me? Because it's an accident of emotions. Because it was purely as a result of God. When he said, how did Yosef know it was a result of God? Not that Yosef had a prophecy, but rather Yosef saw that it happened in a way that he couldn't take credit. He was an intelligent person. You see what I'm saying? Most people wouldn't look at it. In other words, like this. If you go into an office, and right away somebody takes a liking to you, you see, so the average guy who's looking to boost his ego will attribute it to his own how terrific he is. This guy recognizes my abilities right away. But if you know psychology, right, you know very well that you're just fortunate. That for some reason, you trigger off an emotion in this guy. Maybe you remind him of his son or the ideal son, whatever it is. But then you know that it's not an accomplishment. You won't be proud of that fact. See, in reality, most people who are not perfected will be proud. You know, this guy was the first day at work. The boss likes me. I can see he really likes me. That means I'm terrific. But that's absurd. You see, Yosef recognized, in the first instance, by Potiphar, he could have taken credit for the chayim. Because it didn't come about. It didn't happen right away. It happened as a result of his success. So then he could say, he likes me because he recognizes I'm successful. In the second instance, it happened in a way that Yosef could not take any credit for it. He saw clearly that right away, this guy likes me, and he's giving me special favors. That means it's just emotional attraction, which I have no control over. So therefore, from the very beginning, Yosef could not claim the credit for what? For the things that he achieved. You see? So then he began to really work on the emotion. That's when in prison, Yosef began to reflect back on the emotion and how he had failed the first time around. And I'm just assuming now. I mean, I can't tell you the particulars. I can't tell you the particulars of what his thoughts were. But it could be along these lines, in other words, that that he had this emotion of overestimation. And it was tied in. You see, it was tied in with this idea of being a Moshe, of being one who can control reality. And that the events in the house of Potiphar had reactivated it. And then he began to see that there's no such thing. There's no such thing as a Moshe. You see, in other words, Yosef could only have this feeling about himself as long as he maintained that there is such a phenomenon as a Moshe'el. But there is no such thing as a Moshe'el philosophically. What's a Moshe'el? In reality, there is no Moshe'el, there's no ruler, there's no man that rules. You see? Man has no rule. He has no power. It's just a temporary thing, and it's contingent upon so many other factors. Even David HaMelech. David HaMelech was the supreme king of Israel. And what happened? Avshalom, he had his sons, Avshalom, an event occurred, and this, and a rebellion, and before he knew it, he was running for his life. Alright, he worked his way back in. But there's no sense of absolute Moshe'el. It's dependent. It's too contingent. The world is too contingent upon other factors. And you're dependent upon other people's emotions. And other people's emotions are things over which you have no control. Yeah. What I'm telling you is, because you see, from what happened, that Yosef did a complete tshuva. In other words, the whole objective of being cast into jail was to give him an opportunity to effectuate the tshuva. That did not occur the first time, right? But in the second time in jail, it did occur. So I'm trying to show you the chain. In other words, how it worked. Now, where do we see? Now, the thing is like this. You must posit that Yosef actually did overcome the emotion the second time when he was in jail, right? Okay, I'm just trying to show you, to give you some of the factors which might have contributed to that. A lot of this is speculation. Where do we see? But you must posit that he did do tshuva, because the whole purpose of being in jail, was for him to do tshuva. And then God let him out of jail, and he achieved the position of being a Moshe'el. So you see? In other words, the ultimate destiny of Yosef was to be the ruler. And he could not be the ruler. God would never have allowed him to be the ruler unless he had mastered this emotion completely.
Why?
Because that was where his emotional vulnerability was, in this very area. Now, I'm sorry, Solomon?
Why?
Where do we see it? At which point do we see an indication that Yosef had done tshuva? Does anybody know?
Later on, he's with Pharaoh.
No, but where do we see in jail itself? The Ramban points it out.
Oh, you see that.
Take a look at Mem. You see the they the story. They both had the dreams.
With the dreams.
With the dreams.
From God,
and he saw them, and Yosef saw that they were very upset and very depressed in the morning, and he asked them what the problem was. They told him they both had dreams. And Yosef said, "Tell me your dream." Now it says like this, in Pasuk Vav, that Yosef came to them in the morning, and he saw them, and they were very upset. And it says that he asked the officers of Paro that were with him in jail, in the house of his master, saying, "Why is your face so bad today? Why are you so upset?" All right, and they told him. Now Ramban points out on Pasuk Zayin, this is Ramban, because it says that he asked the officers of Paro. Right? He asked the officers of Paro. Now why does the Pasuk have to say he asked the officers of Paro? We know who he's dealing with. We've been told already that it's the officers of Paro. They should have said he asked them. We know who it's referring to. So the Ramban says it would have been fitting for the Torah to say he asked them. Why does it have to again repeat that they are the officers of Paro? Aval Herich, but it extended it. Why? Ki rotzo l'saper b'shvach Yosef. Because it wanted to tell us about the merit, the praise of Yosef. Shehoya na'ar, because he was a youth. Eved, a slave. V'shah l'shnei sarim gedolim. And he asked two mighty masters, these are two powerful people. V'heim b'veis adonav. And they were in the house of his master, Asheshtana, son Eoso, who hated him. In other words, they were under Potiphar's rule, who hated him. And as far as Yosef knew, he was angry at him. And each one of them could have commanded to have his head removed. He wasn't afraid of them. Yosef wasn't afraid of them. To ask them, and to say to them, his interpretation. Yosef wasn't afraid to ask them what's bothering you, and he wasn't afraid to give them his own interpretation. Why? Because he had complete trust in his chachma. Because if the baker would have been saved, the one he predicted would be killed, if he would have been saved, he would have hung him. So what do you see from this? This is a very important Ramban. The Ramban is telling us.
So why did he go to the jail? Why did it list that he went to South Bahamas? I just mentioned the names.
The reason why it mentions it is to point out to you that there's something special about Yosef going to these people. That Yosef didn't just go to them, but that Yosef went to very, very mighty people. It's trying to point it out to you. That this shows you something about Yosef. Now, what does it show? It shows that he'd come a long way. Because this is the same youth who had acted foolishly when he was a youth, and he didn't recognize his brothers. He didn't recognize his brother's emotions, and he told them the dream and got them angry. And then even after they rebuked him, he went ahead and he told the second dream, right? Because he was controlled by his emotions. You see? This showed what the Ramban is saying is that Yosef had reached the peak of his maturity. That to do something like this means, you see, that he was not involved in either extreme. He wasn't suffering from an ego depletion, a lack of confidence. No, was he acting crazily, overconfident, because he recognized that he was right. In other words, he did something which required tremendous cool, tremendous confidence. If a person that didn't have complete confidence in his chachma could never do this, because he was putting his life in his own hands. What he was doing was, you have to put yourself in the situation. He's a low man on the totem pole, even though he has the favor of the warden, but he knows that overnight he could be killed. He approaches the two top guys. It's like it's like you have to put yourself in a situation. It's like a totalitarian regime where a guy can be killed. 1 second, where a guy can be killed at will. And these are two top guys, right? Now they're upset. They're very angry. The dream. Now, if he makes one mistake, he could be killed. They had tremendous power over there. They could have him killed very easily, especially if the Sarah Ofim would be freed, exonerated. He knew that there was an investigation. At the end of 3 days, they'd have the results, right? And they both could have been exonerated, or one could have been exonerated. So therefore, it was unnecessary. There was no real necessity for him to do this. Nevertheless, he was batuach b'chachmasa. You see him at his peak. In other words, what he did was not a result of a crazy emotion over here, of a crazy egotism. But rather, he put all of his emotions aside. He analyzed the situation very coolly, and he acted. He had the courage to act in terms with his intelligence. Therefore, you see, now only a person that's free of this false emotion of overestimation will be able to do something like this. That's what it is. Yes, Solomon? Probably knew that God had caused him to be thrown to the jail because of his sin, because of his egotism. But when he pleaded to the Sarah Mashkim, right, to remember him, so he said to them, that please remember me. He said like this. He said to them, when you get out of here, when you're freed from here, please remember me to Paro, because I was stolen from my own land. That itself is, he really wasn't stolen from his own land. He wasn't kidnapped, he was sold. He didn't mention that he was sold. That's an interesting question. When he told the Sarah Mashkim, he didn't tell the truth that he was sold. He said he was kidnapped from his own land. Why did he tell him he was kidnapped? The Gampo lost Isi Muma. And here too, I didn't do anything that they placed me in the bower. Which means to say like this, yes, practically speaking, he was innocent of any crime, and that's why he's pleading my case for me, and tell Paro that I'm innocent, I was falsely accused, I was praying. Now, it makes sense to say that, by the way, it makes sense to say that he was kidnapped, not that he was...
Right. And
then it would weaken his case. Oh, your brothers sold you. And here, all accidentally were thrown to jail. In other words, that would make him look, you see? He's saying he's a victim. Now, yes, it was right to tell them that he didn't do any crime. He didn't deserve it in terms of a crime. What was going on as far as Ashkenaz is concerned is something else. Well, that's not for him to discuss. He's not going to discuss this with the Sarah Mashkin. Now, what's your kasha? Itself, you could say this guy's crazy. He's a crazy egotist. You see? But you got to know who you're dealing with. You got to know you're dealing with Yosef, right? And from the context, from the fact that we know that his emplacement in jail, right, was intended to improve him, right? Right? And that there has to be a certain event, there has to be a certain point which demonstrates that, right? So this is the event. Therefore, we're forced, Ramban says this wasn't a crazy... And besides, Yosef at this point wasn't that crazy. He wouldn't do crazy things, you see? So therefore, he's saying that this is the case. And this case, if it's not from an emotion, right, what does it stem from? Batuach b'chachmasa. It has to stem from batuach b'chachmasa. In other words, the case, the proof is not in the case itself, obviously. That's not what I mean. You see? The situation, in other words. We know, right? We know that he was going through a process. And that something, the story has to contain something, the story must contain something, which shows us when that process was completed. Now, when was it completed? It was completed in this incident. Because this incident is a reflection of Batuach B'Chachmasa. Okay?